You grew up on the railroad?
Nine.
You read the Boxcar Children as a...
The hills were too steep.
You had...
And they were alive with the sound of music.
You are listening to From the Dome to Your Home podcast, the Municipal Association's weekly look at legislative action and issues facing cities and towns around the state. I'm your host, Casey Fields.
I'm going to call this the end of summer podcast edition.
Yeah, even though it is still summer, if you look at the
weather-wise,
look at the ambient temperature and the dew points and the humidity. That's correct. I love to talk about weather.
I know, and you know, I really do appreciate that about you because during this point from June to November, our hurricane season.
Yeah, we're very attuned.
We're very attuned to that. Not only for our own properties, but our own life, health, and property, but for the life, health, and property of all of our cities.
Absolutely. And we can talk, there's an issue that we can talk about. Remind me a little bit later.
Okay. Oh, great.
As we get into the meat of the show today.
Could we have, Scott, during August and September, maybe October, could we have a weather portion of the show
to maybe hit on anything
that's going on? You know, I mean, we've got three blobs with increasing percentage of development.
Well, you know, the Hurricane Center.
One in the Gulf, two in the Atlantic.
As we discussed the other day, the Hurricane Center does not give either of those waves in the Atlantic a whole lot of chance.
They were up to 50% this morning.
Really? So they've upgraded them. Okay, I've not seen the report
today. Yeah, I just admitted
today
to the entire world that I check on.
Oh, that's good.
Well, Atlantic activity.
I have the Hurricane Center
in the morning
website
when
bookmarked.
I wake up.
Everybody should in South Carolina.
So they're up to 50%. The blob in the Gulf is 30.
Okay.
But those two coming off the western coast of Africa are up to 50%. And I don't like the way they're moving. We can talk about that later.
Okay. Let's talk about them more intently if they get a forecast cone going.
Okay.
How about
all right
that?
Like if they get a name, I think they're Invest.
No, I don't want names. We look at them. We're tracking them way before they're named.
Oh yeah,
for
obviously,
sure.
Scott. Yeah. Obviously, we've been doing that for quite some time.
Right.
We've been doing that for quite some time. Before we talk about what the trip you took yesterday, the visit you had, the meeting we hosted, I definitely want to pay tribute to the late Senator John Scott. It still sounds weird to say that.
So young.
I don't even know how to describe Senator Scott. I've known him my entire life. And he was a true champion for our HBCUs, a true champion for Richland County. He was the senator from Senate District 19 in Richland County, was a House member for a long time before that.
Was on county council for years before he became a House member.
And just a true champion for this region and this area. He passed away on Sunday, I believe.
And he, actually it was last Friday.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was last Friday. He was certainly somebody who appreciated local government, was a champion of local government, who was also somebody who championed people in rural parts of our state.
Yep.
On more than many occasions. Anytime there would be a piece of legislation in front of one of his subcommittees or in front of a full committee that he was serving on, he always would ask what were the implications of that piece of legislation on the rural residents of the state. So even though his district is largely urban and suburban, I think the beginning of his career, as a county council member, which and representing what was then a fairly rural part of Richland County. And there are large parts that still are, but they're becoming more and more developed. He never lost that way. So we considered him a friend.
Absolutely.
To cities and towns and the Municipal Association. He would, you know, same thing in committees and subcommittees. If no one mentioned it specifically, he would always ask, what does the Municipal Association think about this? What does the County Association think about this? So he always had local government on his mind, and that was something that we will certainly miss. And it will be interesting to see who offers in the primary for mm-hmm. his seat, which will necessitate a special election.
Well, that's in January, I believe.
Yeah,
is when they're, and then they'll have to file again for right.
Then the seat election, will be right. Yeah, the seat will for be open election. In 2024 for a full 4-year term.
Right.
So I think his funeral is
Saturday.
Saturday,
mm-hmm. yeah. At Atlas Road. Yeah, so that will be at Daryl Jackson's church.
Yeah, today's Thursday. Yeah, mm-hmm. so.
And did you know, Scott? Senator Scott came to one of our board retreats.
Yes,
when it
he
was
did.
In Anderson, I believe.
Yep.
And he also was a collector of antique cars, and he has quite a collection
really?
Of antique cars. Yeah. Yes. I mean, cars from the 30s, 40s, 50s, like he, it is, and they are all in mint condition because he took such great care of them. And
yeah,
he was just a wonderful human being.
Gonna,
I think
going to be a big loss in the Senate.
A big loss. But we will keep everybody posted on that special election, and we'll kind of offer some commentary on who we see up and coming in that Senate seat.
Yes.
So Scott, yesterday, Wednesday, you and Erica and Todd went to Greenville, right?
We did.
They hosted the Congressman William Timmons district,
yes,
I guess.
Correct.
In Greenville. And they, this is a part of our bigger federal strategy
mm-hmm.
in not only traveling to D.C. to meet with the staff and the congressmen, congresswomen, the senators, but also hosting in-district meetings.
Right.
So tell me, just kind of give me an overview of the day.
So this is the third of these in-district congressional briefings that we've hosted. And Congressman Ralph Norman, Congresswoman Nancy Mace, those are the other two that we've hosted in the last year or so. Good crowds, good turnouts. It's an opportunity for municipal officials in those districts to come and get some one-on-one time and have a more intimate discussion with
right.
their congressperson. And so Congressman Timmons was kind enough to give us time yesterday, gave us about an hour and hour and 15 minutes. We hosted a lunch, had about 40 people, 40 mm-hmm. municipal officials there. And Travelers Rest Mayor Brandi Amidon was the moderator, the host. She and Congressman Timmons just had a conversation. And he got some good questions. We solicited some questions beforehand. Mm-hmm. Erica, right on our staff, she's the point person on all of our federal outreach. So all credit goes to her for assembling this group yesterday. But she had solicited questions from the registrants who said they were coming. And then Congressman Timmons was gracious enough to take some questions from the floor. So it was a good crowd, good discussion. You know, he is not necessarily on the same political spectrum as a lot of people within the municipal world.
Mm-hmm.
But as we've been talking about, Casey, he offers a different perspective than what maybe some of our folks hear on the regular.
Mm-hmm.
So that was good. A couple of things that he talked about in particular, you know, he started off by lamenting the problem that the country has with regard to our national debt and mm-hmm. the trillions of dollars in debt that the country is. And, you know, he was not optimistic that our inflationary pressures will change until we address the national debt. So, mm-hmm. There's really no easy answer or quick answer to that. And I don't think the congressman offered any yesterday. Certainly he has some ideas and would love to get them going, but until he gets a little more juice, so to speak,
he's got to get a little seniority
in the U.S. House. Yeah,
that's right.
He did talk about the budget with regard to earmarks, though they call them something else, community improvement projects or something. I can't remember.
I like what, that. That sounds a lot better than an earmark.
Earmarks. Well, they're earmarks, but that's a bad word there. He does not sponsor earmarks for anything. He is carrying on the the tradition of former Senator Jim DeMint, who had the epiphany, I don't know, 20 years ago that he no longer supported earmarks. And so explain
that to me, Scott. If you say that you don't support earmarks, that means you are not trying to get money for projects in your district.
Correct. That's exactly
okay.
right.
Okay. So you're not trying to.
Right.
If someone approaches you and says, we need federal money to do a, build a school or do this or do that or whatever.
Right.
You say, I'm sorry, I don't do that.
Yes. That's what he said yesterday. Now, he did say, though, that he reserves the right to change his mind. And
don't we all, man? Don't we all?
But if the right project were presented to him, specifically something for infrastructure, something for economic development, something for public safety, for the military, then he reserves the right to consider it.
Sure.
And potentially ask for that money. But as he said, he can't support earmarks because his constituents will not allow him to do that.
So he is gathering this feedback from the people that vote him into office.
That is
split. He's in congressional seat one?
No, four.
Four.
District
okay.
four. Trey Gowdy's old seat, Bob Inglis' old seat.
That's right. Okay. Quite familiar.
Yeah. Bob Inglis once knocked on my front door in Woodruff. He was out canvassing. He was walking around by himself.
That was kind of what he was famous for.
It was quite the encounter. And he remembered Dr. Slatton from some encounter like a year before, like a training session or something where she spoke or he spoke and then they spoke to one another. It was really quite uncanny. I admire people who can remember that. But what Congressman Timmons did, though, he did say, look, Senator Graham is and Congressman Clyburn are more than happy to put in an earmark for you. And in fact, I think he gave a number. He said Senator Graham, the number of dollars, the amount of dollars that Senator Graham got in earmarks in the last year budget or whatever, he was number six out of the 535 members of Congress.
You think that was a little slight on Timmons'
part? No, I don't think so. I mean, was he
kind of in awe of the ability of Graham
to get money
back to South Carolina?
Senator Graham, that's a position that he's had for a long, long time, bring funding home. If he can get it, he's going to do it. And that's just not what Senator Congressman Timmons, as he said, his constituents won't allow him to do that.
Well,
so
I'm playing a little devil's advocate here, but don't Timmons and Senator Graham share the same constituents?
Some, not all. Remember, Senator Graham.
Senator Graham runs statewide.
Yes, he runs statewide.
So he has all of Timmons.
That's correct.
He has all of Timmons.
But
he also has
a lot of support elsewhere in the state.
Yeah.
Not just the
Republican stronghold of Greenville County.
The tepid support that he has in parts of the upstate. So, so he encouraged folks to reach out to Senator Graham in particular, and of course we've had those conversations with Senator Graham's staff. In fact, his staff is going to be doing
a training session
coming up
about
how to navigate the federal
earmark process.
So, or just plain grant process. So that's coming up. But I appreciate him saying that. I appreciate him.
Honesty is nice.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Honesty is nice.
Absolutely. He also, he talked about, and I want to talk about civility. I'm going to bring this around to civility here in just a minute.
All right. I'm waiting with bated breath.
he talked about, in terms of his constituent services, he gives anybody his cell phone number.
Like his personal cell phone
his
number.
His personal cell phone number. So, a matter of fact, he was a few minutes delayed in coming into the event yesterday because he was on his phone talking to someone.
Right.
He could have been talking to constituents. He could have been talking to who knows. But
he
said, my cell phone, this is my cell phone. If you want to call me, you call me. If I don't answer, I'll call you back. It doesn't matter who you are. He goes, now, I'm more than happy. I would prefer to talk to constituents, but a lot of people have my cell phone number.
Sure.
So,
Well, I'm sure a lot of people had it when he was in the South Carolina Senate.
Yes. Yeah. That's interesting. I'm glad you brought that up because there were a good parts of his, a fair amount of his discussion. He was led to talking about his time in the state Senate as a result of some of the questions that he got from some of the attendees,
right,
which were more state government oriented than
U.S.
than the U.S.
I feel like people don't
Congress
don't understand the federal government.
Yeah.
Because it is so far removed.
Yes.
You know, like the state government is right here.
Right.
I mean, it is. And then you get further down to, you know, the government that governs best.
Well, and he said that. He at the beginning of his discussion, he acknowledged and expressed his appreciation for the government closest to the people.
That's right.
And that's local government, that's cities and counties. Mm-hmm. And then talked about some of his time in the Senate and navigated through some of those questions. One question in particular was dealing with road funding. Mm-hmm. He talked about that he had voted against the gas tax increase, but he very clearly explained why he voted against it. It wasn't necessarily because he was against increased funding for DOT. He did not appreciate the road construction priority process and how that was set prior to Act, I can't remember what the Act number is that was passed however many years ago in conjunction almost with the gas tax increase that set objective criteria for road projects.
That's what he disagreed with.
He disagreed with that. And there were a couple other things, but he did compliment Secretary Hall, Christy Hall, the Secretary of the Department of Transportation, and talked about what a great job she's doing. But he made sure that everyone understood that fixing our road problems in South Carolina, whether it comes from federal money, state money, local money, is going to be a long-term process because it took us 30 years to get to where we are in terms of the dilapidation of our road infrastructure. So it's going to take a while to get us back to what Secretary Hall would call good.
Listen, you can gain weight overnight. You can't lose it overnight. Unless you have a colonoscopy. Then you can.
Spoken from experience there, I'll take it.
Very recent experience.
So, yeah. Then we kind of turned, the discussion turned, Mayor Amdon turned the discussion to talk about civility.
Okay.
And in comparing how the South Carolina Senate and State House works versus the federal government, Congress works.
Okay.
And he was very adamant to say that, and in fact, Mayor Amdon asked him, if you had a magic wand and there was one thing that you could do to improve the civility in Congress, what would it be? And he had to really ponder that for
a great question.
It was a tough question.
Golly.
Especially on the fly. And he said one thing. Only one thing. He had been, when he came to Congress, he had been a part of a 13-member Congressional Efficiency Study Committee. I don't know if that's the name of it, but it was an effort by Congress to try and figure out how to make the legislative process there easier, more efficient, and make it more civil. He said that they made a lot of recommendations, but the answer to his question about the magic wand was build trust with everybody, whether they're on your side of the aisle or not. Mm-hmm. Throughout his discussion, he talked about other members on the other side of the aisle and the relationships that he has and has to work to develop and maintain as they work through issues. Despite the fact that they may be on polar opposites of the political spectrum, they have a trusting relationship. Mm-hmm. He said you've got to build trust. He called it forced family fun. You got to have forced family fun in order to build those trusting relationships. So
don't you think, Scott, that when you go in, you've run this race and you have to, if you want to get out of a primary, you've got to get so far into the party.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to even go further. And then you got to win a general. Then you have to go so far against the Democrat or the Republican that you're running against.
Yes.
And that other people that have been elected to Congress, they've looked at your stuff.
Right.
They've read your stuff. They've looked at your ads. They've seen this stuff. And so you kind of have to come in and be like, all right, I am a real person. I'm not this crazy, or I'm not this, you know, liberal. I'm not this conservative. Well, I'm not the wild person that you saw. I'm actually normal.
Well, and as he said, the 20% on each end of the political spectrum are the ones that, unfortunately, everyone has to sort of play to get particularly out of the primaries. Now, he didn't say that, but that's what it is. And the 20% on the extremes are the ones who are pushing the agendas.
Yeah.
Everybody else in the middle wants to work together, but they can't do it as effectively as they would want to because of those extremes on either end.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and of course, we all know this at the federal level. I mean, it plays out on the news every day.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I think it's playing out more and more at the state house, but that's, and we've talked about that before. It's a discussion for a later day. But there is a desire, and there is a critical mass of people in Congress who are more in the middle. They're not on those 20% ends, the fringe ends. Mm-hmm. Who are eager to get things done and moving the country forward and having debates over policy.
Right. Not politics.
Rather than politics and personality.
Well, don't you think once you've run the race, and that's what, you know, I see a lot of young people who you ask them what they want to do and they say, I just want to get into politics. Well, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you, what do you mean get into politics? Because to me, politics is campaigns.
Right.
Because that's what it is. Yeah. It is a campaign. If you're playing politics, you are running for a seat. You are running for an office. Once you get elected, that is when you have to put politics aside and really concentrate on policy for the body that you have been elected to, whether you've been elected to, you know, a political office, whether it is Senate, House, or if you've been elected somewhere else. You've got to concentrate. Okay, you're done with that.
Right.
You ran your race. Now you have to govern.
Right.
And
you've been elected, now what?
Right. Hey, I think, nice plug for MEO. I think people forget that, and they're just constantly running a campaign.
Yeah.
Like, stop, y'all, and govern.
Well, and as he said, a part of what's contributing very largely to this problem is social media, the phone.
Of course. Well, the 24-hour news cycle.
Correct.
You know, everybody wants to have their face on whatever news station that they think will reach their constituents.
So that doesn't help.
No, that's true.
So that's what he would do if he had the magic wand. Unfortunately, though, when he did say that, look, don't expect it to get any better between now and next November especially.
I agree.
Civility is going to be very
short,
very shorthanded between now and at least November of next year, and who knows how far beyond. He told a story. He said, "Look, most of what you see on television from members of Congress is performative in terms of their outrage and some of the inflammatory statements that they make. They don't really, they're not really like that,
right?
But it's performative." He said, however, Kevin McCarthy, Nancy Pelosi, viscerally hate each other.
So that's like, that's for real.
Former President Trump, Nancy Pelosi, viscerally hate each other. So
thanks for the inside, Congressman Timmons. I think we could have figured that one out.
I think he confirmed what we all already knew, but it was good to get that inside confirmation.
I think we've seen that on TV before.
So, and, you know, he got into a little bit of the national politics and at the outset of the meeting yesterday. We don't want these meetings to be political.
Right. It's all about policy.
To the extent that we can avoid talking about the heavy duty politics. In fact, Todd gave sort of a little warning at the top. Hey, let's talk about municipal issues. Let's concentrate on what we do as municipal officials. We're not going to talk about politics.
Right.
That's not what this meeting is about. We want to talk about policy.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody did a good job of that and stayed in that direction. He did have an interesting There was a question about that Mayor Amadon asked him about workforce housing.
Yeah.
And, you know, what more can the federal government do to promote workforce housing, to foster the development of workforce housing? And he and Greenville City Councilwoman Dorothy Dow got into a little bit of an exchange about, and he talked about, hey, we got to get regulations out of the way. We got to, if somebody wants to do a workforce housing development, we need to incentivize them, put them at the front of the line for permitting, for reviews, for inspections, that kind of thing. Absolutely. Give them, you know, help them out to the extent that we can with tax credits and that kind of thing. And he took a little shot at the city of Greenville and said, hey, you know, I'm talking about Greenville here.
Right.
And so Councilwoman Dow had an opportunity to kind of rebut what he was saying. But ultimately, they agreed on the problem. And she talked about what's our new workforce housing development
Senate
Act?
Senate 284.
It was Senate Bill 284. But
yeah,
the workforce,
I don't remember the act number. Act numbers, Scott. Yeah, bill numbers will always rest in my head.
The accommodations tax workforce housing bill, she talked about that as a new tool and how the city of Greenville is working to develop that. So it was a good exchange. It was a good meeting. Really appreciate it. He kept soliciting questions. We wanted to be respectful of his time, and so each time somebody would raise their hand, we were a little hesitant to let Brandy call on them. But he said, "No, I got plenty of time." So he stuck around, and then afterwards we all chatted. Everybody got a chance to take pictures and chat and greet him. And I will say this about Congressman Timmons. Each time we've traveled to Washington since we've been doing these trips for the last couple of years, he's the only member of the delegation of the 9 members that has taken the time to meet with us each time we've gone up. Mm-hmm. We really appreciate that.
Sure, absolutely.
And he's very gracious and really, you know, I hope that he sticks around and his influence increases in Congress. Mm-hmm. I think he's got the right attitude about wanting to work across the aisle and work with people. We need more of that.
Desperately.
At the federal level, for sure.
I have 2 questions.
Sure.
One, was lunch delicious during your lunch meeting?
So we were all hungry when we arrived.
Sure.
And once they set the food out before we actually ate, we became ravenous.
Okay.
Because of the smells.
All right.
Of the fabulous fried chicken. I mean, you could just smell it. So we had fried chicken, barbecue pork, mac and cheese, biscuits. The biscuits were really good.
I'm sure they were. Broccoli. Were they really biscuits or were they rolls?
No, they're really biscuits.
Okay. Because you know, you call any bread a biscuit.
Biscuits and cornbreads. They were flour biscuits and cathead biscuits.
Yeah.
And then some cornbread. Broccolini, which was really good. And then the dessert consisted of a peach tart square, which was good.
Oh, interesting.
And a tiny mini cannoli.
Oh, God, I love cannolis.
And then there was some sort of a parfait something or other in a little tiny bowl. I didn't want to be gluttonous and get one of those.
Right.
I didn't get all 3 desserts. I did get a little tiny cannoli and the peach thing. The peach thing was good.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. Peaches are always good. There's always
if you
room
can find
for peaches.
Them, if you can find them.
My second,
of course, I know you have the direct source. So.
Of course I do. I love peaches. And I mean, there's some on my desk if you'd like to take some.
I heard somebody this morning on one of my podcasts that I listened to lamenting the problem with peaches not being able to find them. I said, well, I can tell you why. Because of the weather. Stormy weather.
Not in South Carolina.
The peaches down in Titan Farms in Johnston, Trenton, they only picked like 40% of what they normally would.
Well,
because they got bit back in the
spring. It's not Max Pride peaches in Mackey, South Carolina.
Well, I know.
Owned and operated, grown and picked by Kemp and Spencer McLeod.
It's because y'all set fire to tires to keep them from freezing during the freeze, right?
Who else? You don't do that? and it's hay with large fans.
When I was growing up, the peach
nobody
farmer,
burns tires.
The peach farmers would set fire to tires.
No tar fires.
A black haze overhanging all the peach fields.
You light
smoke. You had smoky
you light,
peaches
you light
once
fires,
they came along.
And then you have these big fans, like a windmill, that pushes it throughout the field.
Okay.
Here's the trivia question for you, Scott. I'm not going to give you much time to answer it, so think quick.
All right.
And this is difficult. I'll be real honest with you. What communities that are now cities or towns were located along the railroad of the South Carolina Canal and Railroad Company, one of the first railroads to be built in the nation, which operated around the time you were born from 1830 to 1844?
Can you repeat the question?
Sure.
Is that the question?
What? Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
What communities that are now cities and towns were located along the railroad of the South Carolina Canal and Railroad Company? That's the gist of the question.
How many are there?
Added in.
How many are there?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Good grief, Mr. Producer. There's no way I could get 7.
Just get a couple, and then we'll talk about them. I would move from east to west if I were you.
So I could be mistaken, but didn't the first railroad originate in Charleston?
That's one of the answers. Congratulations.
So
you're smarter than you look.
I'm not real sure. Not real sure how to take that, Mr. Producer. He finds it quite amusing. So Charleston.
Really love to make Russell really belly laugh.
Oh, you know my what I mean? Goodness gracious. So Charleston, I would have to say probably Somerville.
Yeah, if you get all these, I'm going to throw this paper at your face and walk out of here.
I'd say Somerville.
Yeah. Can you see?
No, I can't see it. Golly.
If you just list these off, literally I'm going to throw this at you and walk out. I'm going to walk down the street.
Well, I don't want to have too much dead air here. Let's see. I would guess probably.
Keep going.
I would guess probably Orangeburg would be one, maybe.
Negative. That's Ghost
too
Rider.
Far,
that's
too far north.
That's too far north. You need to stay down in that, like, Berkeley, Dorchester, Charleston area. So now you've gone to Somerville. Mm-hmm. Where would you go after Somerville?
Well, I want to go from east to west, right? Is that what
that's
you're
right.
saying?
Right.
So
if you're going
gosh,
Somerville, then maybe you'd go to St. George.
St. George, then Walterboro, maybe?
No.
Then
not, you'd
not
hit
far away.
Branchville and Blackville.
Okay.
And then after that, you're going to keep going.
Kinda going over towards Aiken County.
Aiken, that, there you direction. Go. Yep. And then the next one, North Augusta.
Yep.
So North Augusta used to be called Hamburg back in the 1800s.
No doubt there were some German settlers there.
And then St. George was Georgia's station because it was on the railroad.
Well, and you think about the Augusta Canals over there, over that way.
That's right. South Carolina Canal and Railroad Company.
I was going in the right direction.
You definitely
sort of.
Were. No, it scared me there for a minute. I thought you were about to just rattle them all off.
No,
I
can't. I almost started to say Lincolnville.
Total meltdown.
I almost started to say Lincolnville, but Lincolnville's too close to Somerville. You wouldn't have had a railroad
second
stop.
Stop.
There.
Yeah. When my grandparents lived, when they were living, they lived in Macby, and trains would fly.
Sure.
Through downtown. I mean, that was the downtown where the post office was, the bank.
Yeah.
And that railroad way back then when I was going separated the nicer communities from the poorer communities.
Sure.
Which now.
Hence the phrase, the other side of the railroad tracks. Yep. Well, if we'd had railroad tracks in Blue Ridge, I would have been on the other side.
Right.
Yeah. Put me on the side of the street with the other side.
100%.
That's me.
Anything else about, do we have another one of these scheduled yet? I know we've got another trip to DC.
No, I don't think this year, Erica has been efforting some schedules for these congressional people.
They're tight.
Are very tight.
They're so tight.
They're all in August recess right now, but you know, they're committed to other things like, Congressman Clyburn was in the state last week and I know he was in Lake City. Mm-hmm. One day, spending time there with folks. So they come into the districts during those recesses and their schedules are completely packed out. But he was very gracious to give us some time. And, you know, Erica's relationship with the staffers.
Oh, my gosh.
At the federal in D.C.
incredible.
And here in South Carolina is very good. And they all really appreciate her efforts. And we're happy to start continuing to try and make those connections and sort of break that reluctance of that inaccessibility, that right. view of inaccessibility right. to the federal delegation. We want to try and bridge that between local officials and our congressional members. And I'm hoping that these events will continue and allow our people to be more comfortable in reaching out to those federal delegates.
Scott, you look where we've come from, you know, when Erica was hired in 2020 to now. Mm-hmm. We've always done the National League of Cities yeah. like trip to DC.
Right.
But we've never had our own outreach. And right. this has truly been so beneficial, so helpful. Little did we know that COVID would happen and right. we would have all these, you know, different revenue streams, the federal money yeah. coming in with yeah. Erica having these building these relationships at the same time.
Yep.
I mean, it's just been valuable.
Yep. She's done a great job. And that was one of the very first things that we assigned to her when she started. Right. And she's done a bang up job. Really, really proud of what she's done there. So hopefully we'll have another one scheduled soon. We'll be going back to DC probably in the fall.
Right.
Just to check in. As Todd mentioned yesterday, and we've talked about before, when we go on these trips to Washington and meet with these House members and senators, we're not going up there to ask for anything.
No,
we're just
not a
checking
thing.
In to make sure that they know we're here and
right.
can act as a resource. Let me get back real quick. We were talking about the hurricanes.
Okay, yeah. Take me back to the weather.
So
allow me to look at my trusty weather.
This is relevant to our discussion about federal stuff.
Okay.
The National League of Cities, speaking of, alerted us that FEMA has run out of disaster assistance monies. The fires in Hawaii have exposed
either depleted
or exposed or brought to the fore FEMA's, they're out of money, disaster relief money. I think President Biden, I think I understand this, has put in a request to reauthorize disaster assistance funds. I mentioned that yesterday to Congressman Timmons' staff to say, hey, we support this. You know, we don't care about whatever else is being asked to be reauthorized.
Right.
It's probably more political than the disaster relief money, but they need to replenish those funds. It's hurricane season here.
Yeah.
We're coming up on ice storm season.
Right.
You never know when we're going to get a tornado. So they need to get that done immediately.
100%.
So that not only can FEMA continue to help people recover in Hawaii, but be prepared to lend assistance
to our other disasters. Midwest and northern, you know, for snowstorms.
Yes.
And then
whatever happens.
Yeah. Any
sort
of natural disaster.
It's relevant now for us, especially because it's because of the hurricane season. So I'm sure that he will support that. Everybody needs to reach out to their House members, especially their
U.S. House.
Their U.S. House members.
Right, U.S. House.
And ask them to support reauthorizing FEMA's disaster assistance funding.
Scott, I misspoke earlier.
Mm.
Invest 98 and yeah. Invest 99 are up to 60% chance.
Okay, well, I'm going to start paying attention then.
Listen, that would make me feel better. I would sleep better at night.
Yeah.
I know my mom would because she really depends on you for weather pertinent information.
As Monsieur Candy said, you had my interest. Now you've got my attention.
Yes. Finally.
Okay. Is that it? That's all we want to talk about?
That's all we want to talk about. We'll be back next week with some more good stuff. Thanks, everybody.
Be sure to follow the Municipal Association's podcasts on Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Audible, Spotify, and SoundCloud. Find the latest from the Municipal Association on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and the Association's website, masc.sc.